And we are live. This is Dark Journalist. What a fantastic crowd that we have out there in the ideas room tonight already. Of course, tonight I am joined by the lovely Olivia.
Hi, everybody.
And Olivia, the heat is on, as they say. The global situation is getting kind of unmanageable, shall we say. And tonight we're going to take a look at a very interesting set of developments that correlate so much with what we study on this program, which is all around ex-steganography. And a lot of that includes Elon Musk this round. And we're also looking very deeply at some of the movements around the presidential race for 2024, which I have to say this time matters a great deal. And we need to kind of pay attention to that and slough off a lot of the cynicism about politics this time around, just this once. And hopefully I can build a better future because we have some very interesting points we've been covering in the last two episodes. What you got?
Oh, no, you don't want to know.
That's great. But it seems to me that there's a move with this whole candidacy of RFK Jr. that, you know, we're moving into a totally different era with this presidential election and Trump's return and the attempt to knock Trump out via legal means. We've been doing reports on these, and today is another special report on this. We're going to go about 90 minutes with this tonight. And of course, speaking of RFK, three different events coming up. He's launching his presidential campaign, and it's a huge earthquake because he's been able to stand up to that machine and really deck it and tell it like it is in terms of all of the incredible scandal around Fauci and everything else associated with the kind of pharmaceutical COVID takeover that's been happening. Now, what's interesting is who's the bigger enemy of the media at this point? Is it RFK Jr. or is it Trump? This is the great question. So for me, you know, this shows that we're on the right track with these candidates and that the people in the middle, the Bidens and the others, are the ones who are really, you know, have the establishment on their side and they need to keep the war machine going. So that's what we're going to be looking into tonight. I'm also going to share some very interesting correlations with what's going on with the new UFO Arrow group and some of the hearings that they're going to be holding on the very same day that RFK Jr. is announcing his presidential bid. So it looks like all the stars are aligned, Miss Olivia. That's the way it works.
Karen Carpenter wants to know, is Daniel planning to attend RFK Jr.'s announcement gathering in Boston on April 19th?
Well, you know, we do everything we can, but there's three different events coming up, so we'll be at one of them for sure. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's a historic piece that we're looking at in relation to this. And, you know, the kind of earthquake of his candidacy is going to rumble through from April 2023 to November 2024. So it's going to be a major factor in any case. And there's been a lot of different things thrown around. We were onto this early, and frankly, I knew he was going to run. I had information that he was going to run. And so I've been anticipating this, but still to see it happen in real time is a totally different matter. So we're watching this kind of take off, and it is the Democrats who are flipping out about his candidacy. In fact, you will find that there's a lot of you know, room in the middle for agreement between Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, Green Party, whatever it is. And he has a lot of those elements to him. So he's you know, maybe he will be kind of this legacy Democrat family. In looking at the Kennedys, they have the incredible legend of the work and public service that they've done. But the Democratic Party is no longer the Kennedy Party. And this is maybe a chance to recapture that. At least for this go round when it's so crucially needed. And on the other hand, you have Trump up against the establishment. He's been in there once, so he knows all the rules of the game, and they're doing everything they can to keep him off the ballot. So on both sides, we have a struggle, and it seems to me the best possible outcome is to have on the Democrat side, the nominee be Bobby Kennedy and have the nominee on the Republican side be President Trump. And that will serve the country well. This other thing that they're building up with, you know, Biden DeSantis or something, that, you know, everybody gets screwed in that equation, unfortunately. But this is a very interesting one, and it comes in on the heels of this really kind of remarkable UFO piece. So 2024, you know, they're going to have the kind of false UFO disclosure at the ready. And certainly we can get the real thing. But if we're not careful, we're going to wind up with more of the same, you know, this kind of centralization program and the biometric surveillance and fascist state piece that we're moving into, like Europe is moving into, like China already has. Or we turn the whole thing around and that disclosure that comes out is of a positive nature and alludes to genuine transparency. But it's going to be one of the two, because there's going to be some kind of disclosure as part of this campaign. Mark my words, you heard it here first. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Special Report. Tonight, we're going to give you a special look at Elon Musk, ex John Trump, and also the whole fascination around ex-steganography and how it relates to these innovative technologies. What is it all about? What is the ex-steganography program all about? Well, if you've been here, you know, you've seen over 150 episodes of what it's about. But when you drill it down to its core, there's a predictive aspect to a lot of the information. And this is something I want to put across about the mystery schools in general, which is when they're giving you information, built into it is a kind of timeline. And the more that you can read between the lines going back into the public mystery schools of theosophy, the Casey work, Gurdjieff work, Rudolf Steiner, then you're moving the flow of that information that they were leaving out there and saying, you can have this. You have the ability to use this as the train tracks going forward, or people could ignore it. And so it's a very interesting thing when you find out the different stories that people send me, you know, because we do so many shows here about the mystery schools. They'll send me emails and they'll say, you know, I picked up a Rudolf Steiner book in 1995 and it changed my life, you know. And they'll talk about the unusual circumstances of finding the book, things of this nature. And then someone else will write about how they first heard of Edgar Cayce because their mother was sick, you know, and they found something about holistic health. So it was just a series of very interesting ways in which people discover the material. But the material, especially of those public mystery schools that I mentioned, is very different than a lot of the things that we see out there kind of co-opting a false, you know, sort of a military, industrial, spiritual entertainment complex. And, you know, that's something that Gigi Young drills down on a lot, because she knows the difference being right in the heart of the thing. But I would say that this is important because it's an important distinction for us. So the election plays a big piece in what we're seeing going forward. And this time the election really counts, and everybody, it's all hands on deck. The election plays a big role, merging everything into X, which is what Elon Musk is doing, also plays a very important role. So Twitter as an entity no longer exists. It's now folded into this X Corp. And by the way, X Corp, which Musk owns, is in Nevada. And we know Nevada is the home of Area 51, of course. There's a lot of different places that you can put a corporation, you know, like Delaware, for example. But there's so many different options. So when you get something that's in Nevada, you've got messaging happening already. There's a reason why it's there, because there's a secrecy clause associated with technology in Area 51. So we need to understand the roots of the players and the game that they're playing in order to deal ourselves in a hand. We need to keep that in mind. So the best way that we can do that is to get a handle on how the UFO file relates to all of these matters. The election, Trump, Tesla, Elon, who has a company named Tesla, and a lot of the power play that we see going on in the background. We don't have the usual surface fighting going on in this election either. You know how they used to do, you know, really kind of superficial things going after each other, like I'll lower Medicare, I'll raise Medicare, you know, all that kind of stuff. That was the kind of stuff we were used to almost till about 2012. The whole paradigm shifted after Trump because, you know, one way or another, he broke through that wall of silence. And then they had to show more of who they were. And the establishment, the deep state establishment, bared their own fangs on this. So we got a much better look at who's running the show and just how crazy they're willing to act. The problem is a lot of people at this stage of the game expected to be further along with the evolution of humanity. And unfortunately, the faster the technology rolls in, the worse the players become. And the people at the top, you know, the Bezos and Zuckerberg and all those people, they're very undeveloped people in terms of, you know, their emotional structure, their psychological structure. They're just obsessed around the power idea, and they love the idea of morphing into this technological consciousness. So unfortunately, we're not on the tech side, which is really the leading edge. We're not getting the types of leaders that we need, and certainly not on the political side. But this time on the presidential front, maybe that's going to be different. Let's get into a few reasons why this might be a decidedly different kind of affair. First of all, I want to play this right off the bat because we're going to get into the weirdness immediately. And the weirdness in this case is Trump doing an interview with Tucker Carlson. It's kind of one of his first big sit-down interviews after this ridiculous case was raised against him in Manhattan over Stormy Daniels. And I mean, this has got to be, you know, grasping at straws dramatically. But we went over the Bragg case, and we all know it's a hollow shell. Even the Democrats know that. So there's something, you know, strange there. Somebody paid him off to do this. But let's listen here and find out what Trump is talking about exactly. This is him just a little bit into his interview with Tucker Carlson. He starts musing about John Trump, his uncle, who was at MIT and was a big piece of the UFO file, according to my research. And was the what's interesting about this is we have to remember John Trump this way, which is he is being mentored by Vannevar Bush at MIT, and he gets him into the Rad Lab and all these other things. So we have to remember this about John Trump, that the person who controls the UFO file, Vannevar Bush, is, you know, John Trump is his protege. So this is a crucial piece if we're going to understand the battle that's going on in the background. Here's Trump talking about his uncle. It's a very short clip.
You know, my uncle was a professor, a great professor at MIT for a long time. I think he has the longest, Dr. John Trump. And he would talk about a lot of different things, and it was very interesting to me for years. I talked to him, passed away. He's a great, great gentleman. I think he's the longest tenured professor in the history of MIT. But if he wasn't, he was very close, because he was there for almost 40 years. And we talk about things, and he said, you know, someday they'll have a suitcase, and in that suitcase, it'll be nuclear, and you'll blow up New York City out of a suitcase. And I said, no, Uncle John, that can't possibly. He's right. The power is so incredible. You can fire up a submarine and run it for years on essentially a tablet. Run it for years. So,
all right, that's enough of that. Well, this is the interesting thing. Trump, in his interview with Tucker, is giving us a lot, actually, because he's dealing a card in the background there by talking about John Trump, which is there's no precedent. There's no question. Hey, what about your uncle? he just brings him in. So it was President Reagan who decorated his uncle. And it's interesting, too, because the programs that Trump was associated with, John Trump, were highly secretive. So we don't know the full extent of why he was being rewarded. But we can take a hint from something that's very interesting hanging out in the background on this as well, which is that John Trump is someone closely associated on one hand with the UFO file. And on the other hand, we know that it's Vannevar Bush who gets him in to look at Nikola Tesla's papers. Now, this story has got kind of wide, you know, it's been broadcast far and wide now, which is a great thing. But we've been looking at it for a while. And one of the things I want you to understand about that twist is that having knowledge of the UFO file on one hand and of the Tesla technology piece, which is the X-Tech, having knowledge of both of those makes you kind of a major player. So if you share that information, say with your nephew, and then he gets into a power position, then that nephew is going to be on everybody's radar, which explains, I think, a lot of the hype around Trump in political circles, beyond just the kind of bitter sniping that goes on in politics generally. Speaking of ex-steganography, here is the death mask of Nikola Tesla. And it's interesting because, you know, I said Nikola Tesla for years, and I heard a lot of experts saying, well, no, it's Nikola. So I started saying Nikola. But then I hear John Trump, who went to get his papers, calling him Nikola Tesla. So it's a hard one to figure. But you can see there's ex-steganography even in the bust. And it's the American Association of Inventors that put this together. Tesla was so important and so crucial. But there are important pieces of technology that have been left behind from a number of different circles. So Tesla's is certainly one of them, and the Mystery School piece goes along with that. Now, we hear a lot about hidden technology or technology that's been bypassed and in favor of oil and other things. So they have the technology at their fingertips, but they never wanted that to come forward. And you've seen a lot of, you know, breakthrough energy movement and things like that to try to get this conversation going to a deeper level, but it never has achieved it. And so, you know, try as they may have, that whole thing, you know, zero point energy, all these different types of things, has not been brought before a mainstream audience. Most people don't even know what you're talking about in relation to it. Now, here are a few keys for us to set this whole thing up. Tesla is the name of the company, of course, that makes all the electric cars that our friend Musk owns. And that's the company that really made him super billionaire. Because actually, when I went through his finances over the years, he was doing pretty well with the other companies. But it's that company, and it's during the pandemic that the whole thing takes off. And he goes from having maybe 15 or 20 billion to having 280 in 2 years. So that's a big change. And then after that, he becomes Mr. I'm Twitter guy, I'm Starlink guy, and all the rest. So there's something behind that whole piece and that whole operation, which I'm going to get into. And the X is, in fact, the key to the whole piece. And this is going to help us tonight as we go along. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is a special report for you on a Saturday night. We'll be back in our usual Friday night spot next week, but special things are going on here. And I want to remind you before we go any further to sign up for our newsletter. That's a free newsletter. And it keeps us in touch through this kind of remarkable censorship that we're witnessing. And, you know, it's not, I've been used to it because of the way that things go and the kinds of topics that we cover, which you really can't find anywhere else. And you will find them treated in very superficial fashion. You know, you'll find the CIA UFO thing, like Gary Nolan's and Lou Elizondo. And, you know, there was this thing that came out recently that there's this guy who, you know, there was a bidding war for his book, for his story. And he's a CIA guy who didn't know he was a psychic child and all this stuff. And the person that he came with this to was just happened to be Lou Elizondo when he headed up the ATIP program, which only existed in his mind. So that's the kind of stuff that they have ready for you. They're going to load out this junk. And by the way, you know, that whole story comes from Project Camelot. By way of being pilfered later by Corey Good and all those types of people. But the original stories came up in the early Camelot thing, and they knew about programs. They'd heard about programs that were like this. This thing is such a rerun, and the fact that they're using Elizondo and they're putting in the kind of press releases about this thing, this whole thing about Elizondo leading ATIP, which we know ATIP, even he admitted, is only an activity. It wasn't a program. And, you know, an activity is an activity. But that was the whole phony thing that we got from the New York Times. And it's pretty major to think how they tried to rifle that lie through. It wasn't completely successful, although most of the reference that you have for around the UFO file, as far as the media is concerned, goes directly to that phony TTSA New York Times Elizondo baloney story. It is important to watch that manipulation and how it rolls out. But let's see how it relates to what we're talking about with the X. So if we look sometime during his administration, say about 2018, Trump decided, you know what I'm going to have by the White House? I'm going to have a Garden of Heroes. And that Garden of Heroes, I'm going to lay out there and I'm going to tell people you know, these are the types of heroes we want. We're going to have statues of that. So it's an executive order on building the National Garden of American Heroes, President Trump. And I'm just going to read a little bit of it. By the authority vested in me as president, the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, it hereby is ordered as follows. Executive Order 13934 of July 3rd, 2020, I made it the policy of the United States to establish a statuary park behind the National Garden of American Heroes to begin the process of building this new monument to our country's greatness. I established the Interagency Task Force for Building and Rebuilding Monuments of American Heroes. And he goes through a number of these things, but I want to give you, and he talks, you know, he relates it to Mount Rushmore and things of this nature. But what I want to give you out of this, some of the very interesting names that he chose for these statues. Let's see if you can track with these. John F. Kennedy. Nikola Tesla. John von Neumann, who apparently also had control of the UFO file after it was passed from Vannevar Bush, Arthur Compton, and then it goes to Neumann, who also was instrumental behind, you know, the atomic bomb. So Edgar Allan Poe is in there as well. And there's a few that are just like, you know, they're in there. But think about this. Trump wants a statue to Tesla in his national monuments. As soon as Biden gets into office, what does he do? He completely rewrites and eliminates the executive order, gets rid of the American Hall of Heroes statues, the whole thing. Scraps it. And that's unusual because presidents will cancel out, you know, each other's executive orders for this or for that, but not for projects like libraries or statues or something. Biden went out of his way to actually scrap this thing. It's also interesting that he started with 30 people that he was going to set this up for, Trump. And then before he was done, the last day in office, he added another 2,000 for it. So he wanted this thing to be a massive Hall of Heroes. The inclusion of Kennedy and Tesla, I think, is particularly remarkable, especially when you look at the crisscross of personalities. So here we have Trump creating, you know, this honorary statue to Tesla. We have his uncle, of course, going through the Tesla papers. Now, John Trump, who was a scientist at MIT, and I've gone through his story extensively on this program, and there's a video up on the channel called Tesla Trump and the Time Capsule that gives you all the information on it. And there's a series of them. But to make a long story short on that, John Trump does something very interesting, which is when he gets called in years later, he reveals exactly how it happened that he was looking into this information. And he said that they wanted him to look into information about that Tesla had about taking flying objects down at a very long distance. And so, you know, you're sitting somewhere, you press a button, you bring down a flying object, maybe an unidentified flying object. But this was the thing they were most curious about. And Tesla had apparently been operating on this level with the King of England and other people saying, if you need help against Hitler, I have this weapon and I will, you know, work on it with you and give it to you to defend yourself against Hitler. And it's quite interesting because the fascination around this is that, you know, Tesla had really developed so many different innovations in his lifetime, including alternating current, that the people on the inside knew that he had all of this kind of talent and he was constantly hounded and blackmailed and had to write his stuff down in code and all the rest. So we have an unusual situation there with Tesla right off the bat. Remember, one of the things he wanted to do was create that tower that would beam wireless energy. Originally, they were saying, well, we want this, you know, you can do these communications wirelessly. Wow, that's incredible. You know, show us how you do it. And they paid him to make this thing. And he said, not only that, I can beam energy to people, you know, so you don't need this whole thing about the electric company. We can beam it from these towers. So they were into it right until then. And JP Morgan and all the other guys said, oh, not only do we need to withdraw our financing from this guy, we need to keep him locked in a box, you know. And that's how Tesla was really from, say, about 1910 until his death in 1943, he was not allowed in on the bigger projects, and he was kept down. His name was kept out, and his innovations were kept underground. And so his own story is quite fascinating. The crisscross of history, with John Trump being the one to go in and examine his papers for the FBI and for the alien agencies, you know, the foreign people who are in the country unnaturally, supposedly, even though he'd already been here 40 years. So this whole piece brings us into a different territory of understanding this. Then we flash forward later to Trump talking right now. I mean, this was just 2 days ago, talking about his uncle, again, messaging out this piece. The uncle, remember, is deep in the UFO file. The uncle, remember, is deep on the Tesla side. So we have that happening. And then we have somebody else coming out and saying, I'm X this, I'm X that, and I have Tesla cars. So if you really start to thread it together, the picture becomes a lot more clear. The thing about the X piece and why we were able to tell you when we started the X steganography show that the X was going to be the crucial piece is that the steganography has nothing to do with it doesn't have anything to do with the conspiracy, or it doesn't have anything to do with prophecy or anything like that. What it is it's a labeling system. So it goes back into ancient times that the initiates were able to keep the X steganography throughout, and they did it for the most secret of rituals. And this is where we get things about the Osiris rituals and all the rest. And it goes that far back, but it goes back beyond the Egyptians as well, because most of what the X steganography comes out of is that tradition of holding the technology from the people and the other priesthoods who were abusing it. And that's how Atlantis got into trouble and created this entire situation. So what we're looking at when we get into steganography is a secret system of one person who knows something, communicating it to another person who knows something without anybody catching on in between. And they have to do it on such a wide scale that they can't, you know, just communicate in little secret ciphers and pass messages back and forth. So what they do is they do things in public that people can read. Now, this whole concept, which went back, like I said, you know, you can find it in Egyptian times, the Mayans had it as well. But the X steganography, I believe, came out of the Egyptian mystery schools and went to the school of Pythagoras and other schools like that, who just over time carried it. And that's why when you get the great story of Sarmung Brotherhood and Gurdjieff and all that, that's the essence of the idea that they preserved for humanity. That's the whole Noah's Ark piece of this, which I think is crucial. But the next thing I think for us to understand about it is that the X steganography, when it gets to around the 15th century, we have Johannes Trithemius. And Trithemius is a very unusual person because, first of all, he doesn't have a traditional education. Nobody seems to know what his early education was all about. But at the age of 21, he becomes an abbot. And he does a series of mystical rituals. And he decides these angels are here and they're here to help us, and this is how we can contact them. And his work is so advanced that he realizes if this gets around that he's going to be burnt at the stake, basically. And so what he did was he came up with a series of ways in which to hide what it was he was trying to experience and tell people about, so that when it passed through different hands and they looked at it, it would look just like a normal religious dissertation. This is Trithemius here. And like I said, his background gets us into unusual territory. But one of the most fascinating pieces about this is that it's John Dee who will use his book on steganography in order to conjure these angels and people for Queen Elizabeth. So inside the book, Steganography, by Trithemius, is this unusual, heavy, heavy overview on how astrology is wrapped up with the destiny of people and nations and all the rest. And it's such a heavy overhang. that you wonder if that isn't part of the steganography that's going on. But here's just a little bit for us to get our heads wrapped around what steganography is. And for tonight, we'll take your questions in the last part of the program. Miss Olivia, mm-hmm. we'll have those going. How are you doing out there?
Doing fantastic.
Fantastic. What do you got?
I can actually answer the question about what is steganography.
Yes, please
do. Alchemy by Angelus says, the practice of concealing messages or information within other non-secret text or data.
Absolutely. And you know, what's interesting, traditionally steganography is used, you know, like I said, all the way back through the Egyptian times. Trithemius says the Greeks used it. They called it a page within a page or writing within writing. So he's then drawing on something that's contemporary with Pythagoras. And for me, you know, he's giving us that definition. If you go into steganography now, you'll find that all sorts of groups use it. And what they'll do is they'll put an image up online and it'll be a particular image. And then there's one pixel that contains a message in it. And people send information like that back and forth all the time. Who are using steganography to, you know, move different types of projects. The government aspect of using steganography, nobody really, a lot of people knew there's government secrecy. But one of the things that I almost accidentally figured out was that they were using ex-steganography to move the UFO file through various government agencies. So anytime they needed to do something to exercise this technology, what they would do is they would take the name of the project, they'd put an X in the front of it, and then the whole project would go black and it would come back as a different project with the same X in front of it. So everyone knew how to follow it when it went into black projects and when it became a public project. And if you go all the way back through the history of it, when they say we've got the, you know, X-15 and it's the fastest space plane and all the rest of it, all of those things and the whole secret history of the X planes, which, by the way, have been the most famous and most advanced planes that the United States have produced, they're already incorporating this other technology into it. And the X technology, remember, it resides inside the UFO file. It's not all extraterrestrial stuff, and that's the rub there. You need to understand this piece if we're going to have a good handle on it, which is the mystery schools also had access to this technology. Ancient groups had access to a similar technology. This is like, you know, a discovery over time. But the steganography aspect, I think, is a great piece for us to pick up on because it acts like a Rosetta Stone. So, you know, the story of the Rosetta Stone, they find this in the Napoleon discoveries in Egypt, and it takes 20 years, and then Champollion decides, oh, wait a minute, we've got this in three different scripts. One of them is Greek, but we have hieroglyphs here. So that's the same message for all three. You know, we've got Egyptian, Greek, and hieroglyphic Egyptian. That's how they solved it. Up until then, it was just a lot of nice pictures all over these walls. Well, this is kind of how it works in this realm, which is you're going to go down into a place where you use a key to unlock the symbolism. And I guess in their case, you know, they got lucky and found the Rosetta Stone. That's the official story. Or did somebody have that a long time ago? Probably did. But with us on this, the ex-steganography piece started to, in all my investigations, show up around very unusual stories relating to the UFO file. And then that whole thing about the X-Files and the TV series and all this kind of stuff comes directly out of the fact that Guy Bannister had developed the X-Files for the FBI in the late 1940s. And this is a guy who shows up later in around the Kennedy assassination. So these things and the naming system, I started to understand it from a point of view of, instead of sitting down with, you know, 20,000 CIA agents and making them all understand exactly what X-steganography is, all you have to do is give them the key and say, follow this project if it has an X in the front of it, and then you can follow it through all its various government agency permutations. That's how they've been able to keep the stuff secret from people in government who are curious about it. And mostly those people got pushed off. And it's funny because the braver people who try to crack the code on the UFO file, who came forward and try to get, you know, like Donald Kehoe and all those types of people going all the way back to the 1950s and 60s and 70s, all that stuff is parodied now, because it's kind of interesting. The CIA does this, which is they have a parody of the people that, you know, and how they blocked them. You know, so they take these people, they destroy their careers. In some cases, they kill them. And what happens is later they will adopt the same bona fides, the same qualities that these people had. And so they'll roll out, you know, instead of the genuine whistleblower, their own CIA phony whistleblower. So it's a very kind of devious system, and you can't see it if you don't know a little bit about the deep game involved here. Okay, a little bit more on steganography, and then we're moving on. Major works of Trithemius include steganography, which means in Greek hidden writing. Trithemius was also a magician. In his trilogy, Steganographia, books 1 and 2 were clearly systems for encoding and were the first books written on cryptography. The third book in the trilogy was more buried in the guise of occult astrology. Many took the writing literally and thought the numbers contained secrets to conjuring spirits. Scholars, however, went further and discovered the writing contained a code and began to work to decipher it. The messages encrypted in Trithemius's tables turned out to be somewhat ordinary sentences. So there's a lot of interesting things about this. What's funny is they didn't crack Trithemius's code until the 1990s. Think about that. So this stuff, we haven't even had it around a lot. I've thought about this in relation to the Nazi Bell project as well. You know, the Nazi Bell information only surfaced when Germany merged, you know, so there was no more East and West Germany. There was just Germany was made whole again. And it's interesting because after that happened, reunification, then all these court cases came out and it slipped through that there was this project called the Bell. So this is how information works itself through. But now we have, as a result of, you know, the discoveries that I came across with steganography, we have the key on the X side. And then through all of this, if they hadn't been working on his stuff, there would have been no key on the Trithemius steganography. So it's interesting the way that these things are emerging now. Let's put it that way. Now, they talk about where the manuscripts went. And it's interesting because how the manuscripts got captured by different groups over time. And then finally on Johannes Trithemius, this is the actual book, the way that he presented it way back when, but it gives us the key because it gives us that answer, that he was, there's a lot of mystery there because of course the same steganography, that Trithemius uses is what they identify as the Scrolls of the Golden Dawn. So again, a lot of the Golden Dawn piece was probably the preserved scroll system that Trithemius had discovered here while being an abbot. So it goes pretty deep on that side. One last thing about steganography. This version of Johannes Trithemius steganography was only recently identified, and it was in the hand of Dr. John Dee. So he made his own copy, and John Dee was the conjurer, magician, and secret agent for Queen Elizabeth. And it's interesting because when you go back in time, you are going to find strange things are coming out about this as well, where there was a painting made in that era showing him doing his incredible tricks and conjuring up these beings and things of this nature. Well, it's fascinating because they found in the original drawing, there was steganography in the drawing, and beneath aspects, when they realized it was a canvas within a canvas, and beneath there, when they took that away, there were all these, you know, bizarre faces inside of the painting. So there's a lot of this piece of secrecy that the secret groups, the mystery schools, use over time. And the secret societies. When we get into our era and we see someone as big on the corporate side as Musk is using it in a flagrant fashion, to the point where he's merging Twitter into his X Corp, he has SpaceX. He was the original person who ran and purchased X.com, which he bought back after PayPal had it, because, of course, he sold his company, which became PayPal. What's interesting is when we go through what he's doing, now his next thing that was announced right after this whole thing about X Corp, it was announced that Elon was creating XAI. That came out Friday, yesterday. And so this guy is going for it. He's saying, you know, all these groups communicate to each other, but he is saying, in fact, I've got the X steganography. Like I'm the person who's aware of this, and I'm their key point person. They've elected me. Now you'll find there have been other kind of also rans around this, and Jeff Bezos is one of them. Branson is another one. And Bezos with Blue Origin and all that is still pushing to be competition. Brandon, it's very interesting with Richard Branson because it's kind of fascinating. Two of his major space companies have completely gone bankrupt. So the whole thing he was trying to do, space tourism and all that, forget it. Bigelow Aerospace, you know, we hear a lot about them because around the UFO file, this guy was like, I'm going to build space hotels and all this kind of thing. And his company was a pretty big player on this. And, you know, at a certain point, everybody, SpaceX, Bigelow Aerospace, and these other companies were basically on the same level, you know, Virgin Atlantic. And what happened was everybody in the background put their money behind Musk. And there's a reason for that. But we also have to acknowledge the extraordinary fact that this guy was not in anywhere near the kind of influence that he was even 2 years ago. So the fact that he's at the zenith of influence and he has a company that's going underground again in Las Vegas, there's that Nevada tie-in. Well, he announced the next thing that they're going to do with this boring company is create this tunnel system under Fort Lauderdale. Well, that's right in the hot zone. So it gets interesting. We have to understand, though, that we are taking a kind of reality for granted without really seeing how it got to be there. And so when we take into account some of the symbology that's being used, we're going to get some of those answers. That's what we're going to try to do anyway tonight. Everyone, it's great to have so many of you here with us. This is a special report for you. And we're looking at the UFO file, Elon, John Trump, my God, all the gang's all here. We're going to be taking some of your questions briefly here, not too long, and we'll go with you till about 10:15. How does that sound?
Miss Olivia. Oceanus Procellaru says you can use ChatGPT to code with Trithemius's steganography, which is fascinating.
Oh, interesting.
And PV says John D's son Arthur has an alchemical formula that was just cracked to transmutate gold last year.
Wow. Interesting. Okay, well, first of all, on the ChatGPT thing, look, we know that they've had that out there for a long time by themselves, on the inside, rather. And so they've let it out recently as something, and now they're starting to say, oh, there's, you know, there's dangers to AI and all this stuff. This is a funny thing about how these things work. It's sort of like, the only thing I can equate it to is, you know, when you talk to kids about Santa Claus and Christmas and all the parents are keeping the secret, but they all are looking at each other and playing along with the children and stuff. This is basically how it is when they talk to us about these things, the UFO file, you know, AI and all this stuff. They already know a lot of this. They don't know the ramifications of bringing it public. I think that they study that. And so they study reactions a lot. But I think it's kind of amusing the way that they do this because it puts us in this position of being like, oh, you know, you're talking to us like we're seven-year-olds. And the AI battle of like, if we don't stop, you know, within 6 months, have a 6 month break on AI. So what we have there is an attempt for people who are pushing the whole technological angle to look responsible, to be like, oh, you know, I'm signing on because this is dangerous. Of course, it is dangerous, but, you know, they've been kind of creating and cultivating this dangerous environment for quite a while. I actually want to go back a little bit further in time. Let's see here. There's some very encouraging and interesting things going on that I noticed recently with Musk, and it's usually on Twitter, and he's doing a lot of, like, saluting Robert Kennedy for different ideas and things. I find that interesting. I also noticed, I went back into Bobby's history a little bit and I found this is all the way from 2018. And he says, Elon Musk has proposed a return to the old standard, which holds newscasters accountable for lying on our publicly owned airwaves. My God, there'd be a lawsuit every minute. Anyone who cares about American democracy ought to agree. Now, this is interesting. So Kennedy is aware of and positively commenting on Musk here in 2018. Later on, within the last couple of months, I've been noticing this trend of Elon hopping on Kennedy's track. So Elon either wants Kennedy to think he's an ally or he is trying to be one. But for my money, when you're dealing with Elon Musk, you're dealing with multiple individuals, because when you get that big, just like Howard Hughes, when you get into a certain place, it's a network that's running you. So yes, you're still an individual person, and I don't think he has doubles or anything like that. I mean, sure, he has celebrity doubles for when he goes out, but he doesn't have clones or anything. But what's interesting to me is, they become kind of combination people. And so you're no longer dealing, when somebody attracts that much money, attention, and power, they're being given that license because they want this to be, they're like, this guy can make this idea fashionable. And you'd like to think, it's like free speech or something he can make fashionable, or space exploration. Those are the positive things that he's talked about to bring to the table. But unfortunately, with Musk, there's also Neuralink, which is trying to convince people basically to open up your skull, put electrodes in there, and let these different AI programs run. They've been able to couch it in terms of like, we can help people with disabilities and things with this. But then he goes further and says, everybody's going to want this eventually. So although he talks like he's afraid of not merging in with AI, he is actually creating, if he does with Neuralink what he did with Tesla, then he's going to create this massive demand for brain enhancement and all the rest of it. And that is the whole psycho-globalist dream. So this guy needs to decide, like one side of his brain needs to talk to the other side of his brain and decide what exactly do you represent. So either what you're seeing there is somebody who was inside the system who got fed up with the group that were trying to, kind of suppress speech and, act in this unconstitutional fashion. He came out and he was like, I'm going to buy Twitter and do all these things. Or he was being set up on purpose as someone who could be, in charge of the entirely large group that doesn't believe in the censorship, and he would be the lead man on it. And then that would make it easier for people to accept things like, brain chips. So there's a lot of explaining that needs to be done in order to get a good background on what's going on there. And this isn't an attempt to be the deep be-all end-all exploration of SpaceX. But I can reveal a few things here that I think are going to help us down the line. Before I do that, I want to dip into this presidential piece because it's important. So going into 2024, what we have is this bit about Joe Biden. Now, Biden just went over to Ireland, and there's no real explanation for why he went there. And there were weird things that happened, like his security arrangements, for example, got leaked. They were left on the ground somewhere. So there may have been weird messaging there too, but on his way out in the plane, Biden was talking to RFK Jr.'s mother because it was her birthday. And he called her out of the blue to say, oh, you're such a great woman, happy birthday from the president. And, by the way, Robert Kennedy was the inspiration for me and how I got into politics. So if that isn't a kind of dirty manipulative move, I don't know what is. But just think about the kind of combination of circumstances of Bobby announcing that he's running against Biden and then Biden pulling up a phone and calling his mother to congratulate her on her birthday. I mean, certainly sketchy. But these are the main stories, and these are Democratic publications. Biden poll numbers look grim as he preps for re-election bid. He runs neck and neck with both Trump and DeSantis. Neck and neck, yeah, I don't think so. And head-to-head matchup at this point. But even they are admitting that he's in the worst shape of any president. In fact, with his approval numbers in real numbers in the low 30s, and people just seeing him stumble around, even the Democrats want to get rid of him at this point. So we're getting into interesting territory as far as he's concerned. What are they going to do there? Now, one of the pieces that we're looking at in relation to how they're going to build up this situation on the Biden side is they're going to go into New Hampshire and they're going to tell them, you can't run your primary. So they've been telling them this. They took the money away for it and all the rest of it. And they said, if you dare to try to do this without our approval, you get no more money anymore for anything. And by the way, there's no debates either. So they're in a situation where, the Biden forces want to keep him in there, but there's a large group inside that Democratic tent and they want to run somebody else. So we're going to find ourselves in such a kind of, battle royal when we get into 2024, and the seeds are already being put out there. But those low numbers that Democrats are talking about in relation to Biden show that they're planning. There's one faction in there that's planning the big deep six on old Joe. Another thing I want to mention about the election part, there's one quote that goes in here, but this is the amount of attacks that RFK Jr. is getting right off the bat before he's even formally announced. Quote, so far, Biden isn't facing a credible threat for the presidential nomination within the Democratic Party. Should he enter the race, the only announced challengers with any degree of name ID he'd face are Marianne Williamson, who dropped out of the 2020 race before voting began, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the son of the senator whose prominent public advocacy in recent years has been against vaccination. According to the later Kaiser Family Foundation polling, only 8% of Democrats say they won't receive the COVID vaccine, underscoring how difficult it will be to sell primary voters on an anti-vaccination platform. So what they're basically telling you is that the entire Democratic Party is captured by pharmaceutical interests and they could never elect somebody, who's gone against science and all the rest of it. Well, interestingly enough, Rasmussen ran a poll of Democrats, and in that poll, Kennedy got 24% of the vote, 24. And he hasn't even formally announced. I mean, we know he's running and he's going to announce on the 19th. But, think about that. That's the name recognition. That's the power of the Kennedys in the Democratic Party, and don't underestimate it. So what they need to do is continue very much with the hit pieces, and they're getting to a point where they're starting to hit in the last week more at RFK than they are at Trump. That's remarkable. I didn't think I would see that one. A little more on this. Now, here is a story that goes back to when Trump was going to have Bobby as part of a commission. Now, a lot of people, when I've brought this up, have said to me, oh, that never happened. He wasn't going to be on Trump's commission. Well, it's on the record with Kennedy and others. So I'm not sure why there's this thing out there that Trump wasn't going to pick him for this. He, in fact, did, and got talked out of it by Bill Gates, who, believe it or not, he listened to. Okay, LA Times. Donald Trump and a major medical clinic have moved vaccine anti-science back into the mainstream. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. emerged from a meeting with Donald Trump on Tuesday to say he'd been recruited to lead a vaccine science commission. That's the LA Times story. And that's before, President Trump was a... Reagan's coming up. President Trump was the elected president, but he wasn't in office yet. So he already was putting this together. And widely reported throughout the Associated Press, Trump asked RFK Jr., a vaccine skeptic, to chair vaccine safety panel. So this is what was going to happen. What we got instead was everyone said, well, you should include Bill Gates on that. And so Trump called up Bill Gates and said, I want to do this thing. Do you want to be on it? And he said, yeah, I do. Who else is on it? And he said, well, RFK Jr. is going to be on it. And Bill Gates said, oh no, like, don't do that. You can't do that, whatever you do. And somehow he talked Trump out of it. And we actually got, Gates and Fauci and that whole clan in there instead. Now, it needs to be a point needs to be made here about Trump on this. I don't believe for a second that Trump is any kind of vaccine fan or pharmaceutical fan. I just think that he's somebody who, you know, plays to the strengths of the thing that's going on at the time. And I think that he, in general, with what he was doing, was so overwhelmed when they brought in the COVID thing, bringing it in, you know, on this worldwide basis and all the rest of it, that if you were, as a president, seen not to act, then, you know, I'm sure that he thought his reelection was in jeopardy and everything else. So I don't think that he did the careful, you know, looking at the situation and realizing people in Fauci, like Fauci, would be behind it. So he made a huge mistake in relation to this. This is something where he can learn a great deal from his original mistake, which was not hiring RFK Jr. to lead that. It is possible, very possible, for him to address this publicly, and I don't think he's done a very good job on that. Kennedy's chances right now seem to be rising, and I think that this is a good thing because he is looking very much like a transparency candidate, but the onslaught of media attacks and the general resistance, the group thought resistance to him because of the fact that he's raised legitimate questions about that type of safety, then we know, you know, this is going to be the same kind of battle royal that we've been seeing taking place. In relation to this, my own interview with him from 2 years ago was taken down. So think about that. I am going to re-upload it to another platform, but doesn't that make you start to wonder, huh, that's interesting timing, isn't it? We also plan to have Bobby back on the show to talk about his presidential aspirations. So we'll be getting that ready for you. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is a special report for you to go deep, deep here on X, Elon Musk, and the UFO file, Trump and John Trump. Oh, boy. We're going to be taking your questions here very shortly, and you can ask them all in caps. Or Miss Olivia, how you doing out there?
Good. Al-Qaeda wants to know, is Bill Gates the real POTUS?
Well, he swings a lot of power in the circles that he's in. One of the things that we know is that he gives all this money to PBS. And so when you see all those specials that denounce all of his enemies and stuff and praise him as this humanitarian, that's because they're getting that $300 million in the background.
I hate it. I used to support PBS. Like and, a good and, little liberal.
NPR too, mm-hmm. You know. But listen, that's the thing. It should be there. It should be a good thing. You know, I learned good things growing up watching PBS, you know. There are all those specials that pretended to weigh questions out on things. They don't even pretend anymore. They're like, you can't think that way, so don't even think about it. It is interesting to me. I think in general, you know, it could have been Gates, it could have been anybody else, but I think Gates in a particular way, because of the type of insidious reputation that he has in technology circles, to allow him to reanimate himself as a humanitarian, you know, it doesn't wash well. And after we saw the insane stuff that he was pulling during the COVID op, I mean, you know, we have to have a very clear idea that these people are being paid off on the news side, that they're not reporting news anymore. You know, news, there's editorial, there's all kinds of things. But the idea would be you'd be coming from a particular place. If you didn't agree with somebody, you know, if you saw somebody who, if you were a liberal and somebody was very conservative, you wouldn't agree with them, but you might respect the fact that they held those principles or whatever. Now it's just people throwing themselves overboard in order, because they got paid all this money and they'll do anything, you know? So you get, you know, like Chuck Todd and people like that on Meet the Press. They'll never ask important questions of anybody. You know, they just have one thing. They're Democrat attack dogs. So, a lot of this is very obvious, you know, and one of the things I think that Glenn Greenwald's pointed out pretty well, because he's run afoul of that leftist establishment by, you know, having real opinions. Well, he said, you know, the problem is you can prove that Rachel Maddow lies, you know, for MSNBC, but she won't stop lying because she gets paid $30 million a year. And that's what we know about. So, you know, they get into a system and the money is good and they know the role that they have to play. And that's the end of that. So they no longer can call them journalists. I think they're just assets. They're paid assets.
They're propagandists.
They're propagandists. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a real good way to put it. So we need to kind of, and some of this is happening, to reinvent the field of journalism, to come from a place of not being compromised. You know, it doesn't mean that you can't be, you know, rich and be in journalism, but it means that you aren't driven by financial numbers for the truth that you're going to give out to people. Because fundamentally, what we have is a system that's about 99% and a half, maybe three quarters, just that. And there's a little tiny corridor, very thin corridor of real things going around that aren't driven by those types of loyalties or profits. It's interesting. You know, I've made a great point about Trump and the fact that Nixon sent him these letters, and we discovered a number of these things, and on the record, they didn't exist, but I knew about them. And I put those things forward about Nixon, and eventually the Nixon Library came out and admitted and released over 300 letters between Trump and Nixon, which is kind of remarkable. But what wasn't on the record, and I found out recently, is that Nixon wrote letters to Bobby Kennedy Jr. And this is fascinating. Now, this is what it says. The front hallway of Bobby Kennedy Jr.'s home in Mount Kisco, New York, bears a framed letter from former President Richard Nixon. Quote, "While your father and I were political opponents," Nixon wrote, "I always respected him as one of the most ablest political leaders of our time." The note, dated June 24th, 1985, hangs across from a letter Bobby sent his Uncle Jack in 1961 requesting a visit to the White House. Once there, Bobby presented then-President John F. Kennedy with a salamander. 4 decades later, Bobby, 53, is one of the country's most passionate environmental activists. This is from 2002, and it's Oprah Winfrey who's writing it. Think about that. Oprah was totally thought Bobby Kennedy was the greatest thing in the world, but now he's going to be, you know, her arch enemy because he's against Fauci and that whole gang. Interesting, isn't it? The way that the wheel turns. But I think the letter theme coming through on Nixon is quite fascinating. Something that I think maybe a lot of people missed and I wanted to emphasize, by the way, that's a shot of RFK Jr. with his uncle, Jack Kennedy. Quite a remarkable history that he has. And, you know, to know, I think, that history and the things that he was a part of in the family, and to, you know, he has his own spectacular track record as a lawyer fighting for good causes, like against Monsanto, for example. And this is a guy who's taken on the entire establishment. And with his book on Fauci, I think he's basically established himself as a completely independent individual aside from this incredible Kennedy name and family. But the fact that he is part of that, I think, makes him particularly dangerous to these forces. And they're the same forces who want to control the country. And they're the ones who got rid of the Kennedys in the first place, let's face it. Yes.
I really wanted to mention this last time. The other thing is, Bobby is a Christian. You know, he's a Catholic. He actually believes in God for real. You know, so many of them fake being believers.
True.
You know, or they believe in science or whatever it is. And, you know, woke up ideologies. But, you know, he answers to a higher power, and there is some comfort in that.
No question. Yeah, it's an excellent point. I think what we're going to see, they haven't seen a genuine person on the Democrat side in a long, long time. They thought they had one in Obama, and then a year later they figured it out. But they haven't had anyone on that side of the fence in a long time. So the guys who stuck to their guns basically got so trounced by Reagan and Bush that the opportunists all came in. Because the guys who were the genuine liberals and stuff, they got rolled over by the Reagan machine. And the Reagan era, that whole piece is very important for us to understand because it's a different type of consolidation of power. It's a consolidation of power, yes, but it's a consolidation of power around the idea of making America something remarkable. And Reagan had this idealism. You know, he was led into different types of programs, CIA covert programs and things of that nature. But he also negotiated nuclear reductions after everyone thought, oh, this guy's the ultimate hawk. He's never going to reduce anything. You know, as it turns out, Reagan was the only one who ever negotiated reductions. You know, people had organized limits before, but here he was taking the piles down. At one point, he sits across from Mikhail Gorbachev and he says, how about zero options? No nuclear weapons anywhere on the planet. Now, how do you figure that one? The only way they could have done that is if they had knowledge that there was another power source. It's just not the one that they talk about. So that's on the record. And it's, you know, it's easily definable as a fact. So the question is, what was the zero option that they were discussing? But just to think of Reagan in that position, coming into that world and being like that. So now on the Democrat side, they have an opportunity, shall we say, to reclaim this. But unfortunately, the Democrat Party is even more difficult situation than the Republicans. They're even more captured, which is remarkable. A couple of things here about presidents and UFOs, and then we're going to dovetail into how this relates to SpaceX and the secret space program, because that's the fact that's never put out there. You know, now let's imagine for a moment Kennedy announcing the moon program as he did in 1962. And he gives this incredible speech. You know, we plan to go to the moon, not because it's easy, but because it's hard. Well, what's fascinating about that is imagine if he slipped in there, we're going to go to the moon a few times and then we're going to stop for 50 years, then we'll go back again, because that's what happened. So the space program never intended for that, that's for sure. So if the space program stopped their missions inexplicably, the manned missions, in 1972, there was a reason for that. And it's never explained. Now there's an idea that they originally kicked around and said 2024 will be Artemis. Well, then they're like, well, 2025, maybe 2030, actually. So, but they do have a plan to go back. And, you know, they suddenly are all interested in space again publicly. This is very unusual because for 50 years, they haven't done anything. Why? Why is there a cutoff from when we went to the moon in 1972 and then nothing? There's a reason for it. And the reason is they developed an infrastructure in space that was completely concealed. And that infrastructure was available basically only to people who were operating under continuity of government protocols. That way they could communicate about it. That's what makes that whole program secret. So by the time they built up this infrastructure, they just needed somebody in the middle to be kind of the front person for it, which is why I think you get Elon coming in out of nowhere. And, you know, they had this whole thing, oh, you know, he developed a company that, you know, did this whole thing about checking out city sites and stuff. And you could go and you could check all the stuff out about the city. And then Compaq buys that little tiny company for $307 million. So, you know, certainly crazy things happen in Silicon Valley, but there's a lot of things like that in there that don't sound like a regular trajectory. You know, some people, even Gates's trajectory, even though we know his background and his dad and all the rest, you can see how he bought the right thing at the right time, or he stole the right thing at the right time. The stuff with Musk and his background doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And in fact, you know, it came up recently that someone was doing a story on him, and they talked about how the fact that his father owned an emerald mine when he was growing up, but he denies it. So he doesn't want us to have that real picture of who he was and how he grew up. That's a problem too. There's a lack of transparency there.
Donnie Darko 727 says, you never get as big as Musk unless you are controlled opposition. Starlink is integral to the coming worldwide electric prison. Starlink allows for worldwide tracking of the free range tax cattle. However, Danielle Jorgensen says, Musk is a futurist that has to dance with Nazis because that's who runs the show. He actually believes that all of this can be benign and is necessary to save humanity from future catastrophes.
Who is that?
Danielle Jorgensen said that.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Well, this is it. Like, there's a lot of different camps on Musk. Here's a fact, though. There's a lot of propping up of Musk. So if anything, you know, the whole conservative rush to he's our hero, he let us talk. You know, what happened was during the incredible, you know, sort of free speech rollback that we saw during the COVID piece, when I'm, you know, I guarantee you that they would pull off another Emergency Powers Act and do the exact same thing at the drop of a hat. In fact, they keep hinting that they're going to do something. But this is important because they started to lose because other companies were coming up and, you know, Rumble and all these other things were big competitors, Parler, everything. And even the fact that Trump did Truth Social, you know, these people were losing all kinds of market share, but the controllers in the background were saying, don't worry, you know, you can lose the market share. Make sure that things go this way because we need to have this program in. So they did it and they acted like maniacs while they were doing it. You know, like I said, Twitter banned the Hunter Biden laptop story because it was going to swing the election back to Trump. So they, you know, they went and acted in this completely unethical fashion in public, you know. So there's a reason for that, because they couldn't go back to the Bilderberg, you know, and say to these people, well, we tried our best, but Trump won the election. Instead, they had to come back and say, here's, you know, we did everything that you told us to do. This is the nature of the problem of the controllers in the background that we don't get to see. And this is what becomes the topic of conversation so much. What we can do is we can see them operate, and you can see them operate on CNN, and you can see them operate through the New York Times. And it is in putting out these different types of things. You know, one of the things that they'll put out, for example, in relation to racial conflict, and they will amplify these things until they create conflicts, because they need that kind of conflict, because otherwise the whole thing does get exposed because people are starting to look at them. And groups like the New York Times represent an arm of the Central Intelligence Agency. The Washington Post is actually owned by the CIA. Technically, Jeff Bezos sold it, but you know, the whole thing, the lineage of the Washington Post is a CIA publication. So the media plays a crucial role in the middle of all this, because we have, on one hand, all this black budget activity going on. On the other hand, we have this black technology development that's going on. And in the middle, we have ordinary people who are now being basically identified and tagged and biometrically sized up to be part of this huge digital identification system, which is completely anti-constitutional. But when we say that, it's anti-democratic and everything else. But when we say anti-constitutional, those people that are doing it think of themselves as just some global entity that's going to control everything. They don't care about the United States Constitution. The trick is, and this is the ultimate kind of trip hammer in the whole thing, is that the United States Constitution, every official in the United States signs on to it. So they're bound by law to enforce it, from the president on down to the meter maid. So the Constitution has incredible sway, and it's a particularly powerful constitution in the United States, which is why candidates who pay attention to the Constitution and, you know, who basically give us that information and say, we're standing up for this, it's a whole different thing versus, you know, what we've been seeing. You know, can you imagine somebody like Buttigieg worrying about the Constitution? I mean, they just don't. And, you know, so we need, that's the difference for the type of politics that we need to have. It's interesting, though, because America sets the tone for the world right now. And if the Constitution can be broken here, then everything can go haywire everywhere. That's the point. So this is why it's so important to keep that trust there and to have that Constitution active across all levels. And it's worth the kind of inconvenience of facing off against really kind of massive and ugly powers that are deep in the system. This is the deep state after all. And remember, that term comes from Professor Scott, and he said basically, you know, it's a combination of factors, including organized crime, intelligence agencies, financial companies, and financial powers, and then the contracting groups around the intelligence agencies who don't have to operate even with the level of legality that they do. So we need to understand what the kind of political slice and political setup is for us now. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show deep, deep tonight on the political front and also getting deep on the UFO file and Musk. Here's a couple of things I mentioned right off the bat. This story now is brand new. I mean, it actually came out yesterday, but it's new as far as they just discovered that Musk is doing this. So as we saw, everyone knew, you know, Twitter's dead. It's all X Corp now. So there's the X steganography. Everything is going to float into this X app, the Everything app, and control everything from your laundry to your, you know, paying your bills. This is interesting, too, because the X app and the Everything app, there's this illusion of, you know, this central system taking care of you. Because remember, in occult systems, everything is about service, even the negative groups, because you have to serve the different initiates and things. In Christianity, the whole thing is about service. You do service. So they know when they get into things where they're rolling out things like Amazon and, you know, the X and all the rest, that the idea of service performs a occult interchange. And so the core of humanity is service. In fact, it is the highest thing that humanity can offer, interestingly enough. And it represents a number of different qualities. What's fascinating is how they can take that and kind of turn it into a slavery system where you're stuck inside the service. So there is a Brave New World flavor to this. Okay. So the next thing that hit was Elon Musk creates new artificial intelligence company X.AI. This is brand new. Name of the new Nevada Incorporated organization suggests link to billionaires' interests in Everything app. So the artificial intelligence that he wants a moratorium on and all the rest of it. So he's moving forward with AI and Neuralink. So, you know, these are very, very questionable pieces. Now, the development of AI on its own is not so much of a problem, but, you know, it comes with a set of problems with there's no ethical chain of command, as it were, just like in anything you would need that. All right. Going back April 4th, Twitter Inc. quietly revealed a major development. It no longer exists. The company is currently being sued by right-wing provocateur Laura Loomer, who accused it of violating federal racketeering laws when it banned her account in 2019. Loomer has a Twitter account again, and her absurd lawsuit is bound to fail. Well, I don't know. But until it does, Twitter as a defendant must continue to submit corporate disclosure statements to the court. So this is how we got to know this. And so in the most recent filing, the company provided notice that Twitter Inc. has been merged into X Corp and no longer exists. That's a quote. As the successor in interest to Twitter Inc., that is the survivor of the merger, X Corp is now the defendant in Loomer's suit. So that was a major development. And then on the heels of that, he's like, I'm doing XAI. So the X steganography is going public with Musk. And so we, you know, in terms of how we interpret that here, knowing that the X steganography represents this technology that's been moved around through all these different government programs, is this is the time that they want to roll it out. And this is the company and the guy that they plan to do it through, for better or for worse. But it's important for us to get a handle on how they're doing this. And that's the other thing. Elon Musk quietly starts X.AI, a new artificial intelligence company, to challenge OpenAI. That's where it's headed. So there's a number of these stories, but I'm going to cut to the chase on this. Twitter Inc. changes its name to X Corp and moves to Nevada. The Nevada piece is so important because, as I mentioned, Area 51 and the secret technology. So there's the connection everywhere you turn with Musk. You've got space, you've got secret technology, and you've got the X steganography. He is the embodiment of that system that they've been using to hide this technology and move its way. Because remember, if we go back in time, what happened with the UFO file in the late 50s is this. Eisenhower has a stroke in office, and Nixon has to take over. And while Eisenhower is out of action, he gets involved, Nixon gets involved in setting up all these different things. And one of the things is to move the UFO file outside of the regular government. And what we get is a corporate trail of breadcrumbs for the UFO file. But it doesn't matter, because as a private company, you never really have to reveal your own private stuff. So the government would always be subject to some sort of disclosure. And they decided, and they made up this idea inside intelligence circles, we'll transform some of this technology to the corporations directly. And by doing that, we'll give ourselves the cover. So it was like a quasi-corporate political situation. What happened is, when Ike gets back in the White House and notices that it's been done, he can't undo it. And so the legacy that he leaves off to Kennedy is a very frustrating one, because what he's laying down for Kennedy is, I lost control of that thing and we need to get it back under the executive umbrella. Now, the executive umbrella for the UFO file, if you go through the various presidencies, there's a series of major fights along the way, including Nixon's fight to get it and to use it. And Reagan's fight, you know, was to get it under executive control, but he was being scared. There was a lot of fear tactics used on Reagan, according to a number of scientists who were giving him information that there were these large ships off of Saturn and that they were probing the Earth. And the reason this is all backed up is because Gorbachev went on the record in 2014 and said, when we had this conversation, you know, he was telling me about aliens, basically. So, and how are we going to defend the Earth against them? So either they were scaring Reagan and giving him false information, which is possible, or they were showing him something that was making him feel like, oh, we can use all this secrecy. And by the time you get into eras that go forward, like the Obamas and the Clintons, it's very sketchy, because the Obama thing is such a weird op and it doesn't have a lot to do with the UFO file. The Clintons tried to get in on that track, but they expected to have a real big piece of that lane when she got into office in 2016, but it didn't happen. Trump got in instead. And what they got when they were planning to do this kind of UFO reveal, they got a guy in the middle of it, Trump, who already knew the game, and he knew the game through his uncle. That's the trick and the problem going on in the background with Trump. And the whole chase for classified documents, if you listen to Trump's interview, and you don't have to be a, you know, kind of a super conspiracy person for this one, if you listen, there's no context for him bringing up his uncle. But for the people who are going to prosecute him on the confidential documents and all the rest, he's saying, remember, I still know this. I still know it, remember? You know, keep that in mind. So that's the context, in my opinion, of him bringing that up. Okay. So speculation mounts over Everything App. So Everything App is just going to be, you're going to pick up your phone, it's going to be an X, and it's going to do everything for you. So the X technology, there's a lot of different ways to roll it out. It's not just space vehicles. It does a lot of things. Remember, residing inside of that UFO file is this whole piece about apotheum and all this thing that we've coined on this show, which ties in with the steganography aspect. In a nutshell, apotheum, all it means really is that there's a certain type of scientific distortion that can take place. And it's a physics distortion which creates a reality distortion so that the traditional laws don't apply. This thing is what they've been very concerned about when trying to re-engineer UFOs. And you can get it. It's in a lot of different types of material where they're afraid of the very stuff that they're testing. Just like when Oppenheimer is talking about the atomic bomb and he says, you know, we didn't know if once we set it off, it would keep going off. We weren't, you know, like the test was the test. We were going to find out. But if it kept going off, it meant it would be more and more and more atomic explosions, that it could set off a chain and all the rest of it. So they don't always know when they're doing things what the side effects are going to be. In the case of apotheum, it looks like this is a very old story that goes back to the mystery schools and goes back to a destruction during Atlantean times. And that this piece that, you know, and you can find it in the Casey readings, the best, Casey and Steiner's readings on this are remarkable because they give you an idea that there's a very high culture scientifically. They're not, you know, I mean, people have an idea of the Atlanteans. It's like the seafaring culture and all this rest. Well, that's because it's an island story. And of course, there was a seafaring aspect to it. But Casey has them, you know, spaceflight, you know, and he has their lighter than air machines here moving through things, you know. So the whole physics level that's operational is totally different. When you get to the destruction of Atlantis in the Casey story, you get to the reversal of the two-eye stone energy, and it creates a kind of magnetic rift in the entire globe. So, you know, and there are areas that correspond with this, like the Bermuda Triangle and things of this nature. This is a way for us to understand what they're studying. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, when you hear things about the UFO file and what they're bringing out about it, none of it is true. This is a tough thing for us to get our heads wrapped around, but they don't want you to have any of the truth about the UFO file, because that's their ultimate ace. And it's one of the reasons why they don't like Trump, not because Trump is going to share that with everybody. I mean, he was in the presidency for 4 years. He didn't share it, but they don't want him on their level. They don't want to work with somebody on their level. They didn't want to work with Kennedy for the very same reason and Kennedy's policies. So what we're coming into with the 2024 campaign and all the things and the forces that we're seeing this year, you know, because this year is the setup for everything. Next year is the horse race is already gone, right? It's already running. This year is the setup point. So 2023, the absolute crucial time that we're in right now. And the setup is what? It's the piece. What did we start the year off with? The phony UFO shootdowns by NORAD, right? And the debris disappeared, whatever it was. The weird Chinese balloon. The COG commander coming out. You know, these were weird, very weird themes. And the idea was in preparation for test. So I think for us to look at this year properly and the situation we're going into the world politically in 2024 is it's a gigantic earthquake of a transition time. But unfortunately, there's an equal possibility that, you know, although we could get the best outcome and we could get the right kind of disclosure to move the culture forward, you could get the absolute worst. it's possible. And this is the nature of the problem. So what I see when we're looking at the forces that are out there, that we have this Biden situation, which is a committee running this person and, you know, looping us into things like World War III and all the rest. But on the other side of it, we see coming in from the north, you know, the Trump force is coming in. And over here, you know, coming down, we see the Kennedy forces coming in, and they're both aiming at the target. You know, they are coming in to seize and get rid of this regime, and they are moving into position to take over. So this is where the battle is at, and that is a problem for these people running the committee behind Biden. This is a very tricky geopolitical situation because Biden himself is also under, you know, definitely having problems in his own party. So this is the thing that can happen where these forces can all come together at the same time and remove the Biden regime. But getting Biden out, if they just have a dummy replacement of him, like a Newsom or somebody horrible like that, it won't be any better. And, you know, literally as a country, we couldn't survive 4 years of that. So the nature of the situation is to keep a close eye on what's happening with the amount of pressure against the candidacy of RFK Jr. It's going to be a major parameter in all this. The other piece to watch, of course, is the intended takedown of President Trump. And in the middle of all this, you have the rollout of the X steganography directly of the technology through SpaceX, you know, Twitter and Boring and all the rest of it. The thing that he's doing is consolidating the technology into one centralized service, you know, one way to be human, basically. And what he's done is he's attracted a lot of people back who were, you know, on the conservative side who had given up on these companies. And really, the company that he picked up as Twitter was sputtering. A big chunk of their people had gone elsewhere because of the incredible tactics that they were using. So Musk finds himself in an interesting position, because what I've always felt with him is not that he wants to change the Constitution and run for president, but he wants to be space president, basically, or tech president. You know, it's just like he already is giving out the type of advice. And also with Neuralink, for example, he was like, hey, you know, to Ukraine, you can use this, you know. Well, you know, that's sort of interfering in the war. And I'm no fan of the Russians going in there, but I don't also be interfering on behalf of Ukraine. You know, we should have a real peace process, and we know that people don't even talk about that. It's not even mentioned. So this is the nature of the problem that we find ourselves in this situation, but it represents a very rich tapestry of pieces that we can put together and really change the whole situation around through the fact of utilizing the knowledge and the application of some of the things that we're learning here. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. Incredible to be with so many of you here tonight. And it's great to have Miss Olivia here. What do you got out there?
Well, Jam and Mammy says, Roger Stone is encouraging Trump and RFK to run together. What does DJ think the chances are? We know, of course, Roger Stone watches the show.
I think Stone is just floating that, you know, he knows there's a lot of technical problems with it. And both of them, I think the focus needs to be on RFK winning the Democratic nomination and on Trump winning the Republican nomination, because that sets up the scenario where, you know, it's a win-win for everyone involved. The idea that President Trump could take Bobby Kennedy and have this unity ticket to, you know, we created this whole piece about the unity ticket. We've been talking about it for a long time, and we know it's been tried in various ways, and actually Lincoln accomplished it. But I think it's interesting because just the fact that it's out there, you know, whether or not it happens, but the fact that there's a large quotient of people who are, you know, have had it on the Democrat side with the situation that they're in there. A lot of them are jumping ship. We see it in the media all the time. And then the Republicans, it's a little bit of a different situation, but they come to disrespect the establishment Republicans. You know, like, they don't like the Mitch McConnell types. And so what you have really is Bobby is an outcast in his own party, and Trump is an outcast in his own party. So the fact that they are being, you know, the ones that are catalyzing a change, and they're so very different, you know, they really are. But one thing I think that they have in common is that they know that this system is completely rigged, and that a new system needs to be put in place that better reflects actual America. I mean, I like the, when they talk about and try to make fun of the Trump stuff about America being great again. No, it should be. It should be. It has all the resources, all the talent, and, you know, it has incredible citizens, and it has the incredible background of leadership for the world. The problem is the deep state taking the machinations over of the country and then turning us into this profit-driven trample over people's rights, you know, get rid of the Constitution thing, because that's who they are. They have nothing to do with genuine America. Yes.
The weed in your garden. Do you really think we can vote our way out of the mess we're in? A lot of people have this question.
Well, not, you can't take that traditionally, but you have to understand that 2024 is very different because of everything we've been talking about, because there's three factors involved here. Four, in fact, that just don't show up. You know, like, the UFO file is going to be a crucial factor for 2024. There's too much around it for it not to be at least a part of that 2024 campaign. So it's not going to be avoidable next time. The Bobby Kennedy coming into the race is a gigantic earthquake, because one, he's so anti the pharmaceutical companies who have a stranglehold and provides 75% of the advertising revenue for the mainstream media. So you can see why these people are just going to be completely against him. But he may have some allies out there that remember that name. And, you know, he may also be being underestimated as well by people who are like, oh, you know, we can take him down easy. He's a lawyer, you know. It's not like he has a big political career behind him. That whole, you know, the things he's been able to do, what he's shown he can do on his own, even without the whole family, like the Kennedy Network is a gigantic, vast, long arm, and you don't want to underestimate it. I think he can do a lot here. So I do think that maybe traditionally, you know, you could see somebody being cynical and saying like the elections don't matter because the wrong people always get in. This time, I think that we have to win it because we have a couple of options there, I think, with Trump or Kennedy to getting back to a more constitutionally based country. And that's crucial because if we don't do that, we're heading into weird, you know, dictator fantasy Disneyland because they're moving a lot of things in to justify surveilling the public. And what we have, even in the story of the whistleblower who put all these documents out, it's a very strange story. They grabbed this guy in Massachusetts. But the way it strikes me is that they wanted this thing as an excuse. And maybe they kind of encouraged this guy to do this because it seemed to me immediately they came out and they were like, you know, we're going to have to go through video gaming sites now, you know, you no longer have any rights to be anonymous and things of this nature. This is what they want, you know, and they also want a second internet, which is what they can achieve through a gigantic cybersecurity incident. And when you're getting back into the internet, it's just like, you know, me, when I go to renew my license, you know, they make you go through all these things that you never had to go through before. And, you know, it's like a new process. You come out a new man on the other side of it. Like all you're doing is driving your car. But, you know, the way I look at it, I got a letter from Homeland Security when I was renewing my license. Think about that. So, you know, when you look at this, you have to say to yourself, you have a organization like Homeland Security has 250,000 employees. You know, we have the NSA, which we don't even talk about as much as we should, who is like the CIA, but much larger. And then you have the CIA in the middle driving entertainment, driving media, driving all these different situations, driving the politics of the situations. And their track record is bloody. You know, what they're good at is assassination and overthrow of country, you know, flight, madness, you know. And so when you think about the nature of the Central Intelligence Agency, that thing has continued to grow, and it was a problem in Kennedy's time. That was 60 years ago. And there have been very little checks and balances on them, except when they've, you know, got caught doing things like torturing people, you know. And what is this group that has their own air force and can drone strike people at will? You know, I mean, the CIA, the entire invention of it is so completely extra constitutional that I can't believe it was ever allowed. But the fact that it was there and that we have repeated presidents of, you know, attempts to get rid of it or at least hem it in, then, and a lot of those, you know, in the case of John F. Kennedy, his battle with the CIA, the piece that doesn't come out is the UFO file piece. So that's, you know, that's the core, cuts right to the core of the assassination. These people could not tolerate somebody on the same level with them as far as the UFO file was concerned. And they didn't want him to share it. So these questions that they were grappling with 60 years ago, we're still grappling with it because it's the same group that just keeps changing its clothes. And sometimes they dress up as liberal Democrats, and sometimes they're conservative Republicans. Right now, they're dressing up very much on as socialists, but, you know, it doesn't matter. The clothing doesn't matter. the next round, they'll change their clothes and go after the group that they were just pretending to be, you know? So this is the weird thing that we need to understand, the kind of super dynamic situation we're in politically. Yes, what do you got?
Scarlet Fire says, what's up with Hillary endorsing RFK Jr.? And Sarah Ann responded, because he endorsed Hillary quid pro quo.
I didn't hear that Hillary endorsed. I doubt that that's true. She's such a Biden lapdog that I wouldn't imagine that. No, she wants the presidency for herself. So it comes up on the Kennedy side. What's interesting, the crucial piece that shows the Kennedys moving away from the Clintons is when Ted Kennedy endorsed Obama instead of Hillary Clinton. It was such a blow, and they went, both Bill and Hillary went to his house to demand that he change this. And he said, no, you know, this is what I'm doing. He knew in the background how corrupt they were. I don't know he knew that how corrupt Obama was going to become, but, you know, the fact that he blew them off, I think, gives you some idea of where the Kennedys can stand on the Clinton side. On the other hand, you have to remember this about the Kennedys. It's going to be tricky when you look at the Democrats, because the Democrats are so captured and corrupt now that Bobby, coming into this fight for the presidency, is going through a situation where he's going to have to stand up and take them on. And they're going to look at him and they're going to say, this guy is, you know, a worse threat than Trump. And, you know, they're going to coalesce to try to make sure he doesn't go anywhere. So for me, when I see that situation, I say, you know, the Democratic Party is lost. It's already captured. But, you know, somebody like Bobby could come in and shake up that situation. Yeah, what do you got?
No, never mind. Kyle Hagen says, how is Bobby going to survive the DNC onslaught?
We don't know how that's going to play out. They could overplay their hand.
I mean, if anything, they will expose themselves to people. Yeah. A lot of people already see it.
Yeah, but I think that's
more. We'll see.
I think that's the best point. Here's the thing. When you look at the setup, they're already in place. They don't want to allow debates, and they're threatening the political leadership in New Hampshire and saying, you can't have debates or you don't get any money. And also, we're bumping up your primary. You're the first in the nation primary, but no more, you know, South Carolina, because that's where we know Stepford Biden can do well. And South Carolina is a great state, but it always came, you know, New Hampshire was this little state, and the idea was person to person, door to door. That's why bad boy Biden did so terrible there, because he came in with 17% of the vote against Bernie, and Bernie creamed him almost 40% of the vote. So they don't want to see that happen at the beginning of this, because that almost took Biden out of the running at the time. If they made some kind of backdoor deal with Sanders to back off. Because he had real, you know, real people followed him. Biden couldn't get anyone to show up, you know. They had to rent out drive-ins and yell from crates and stuff. They couldn't even fake a crowd. I don't know what was going on there. But for me, the way I look at it is, you know, there's something very savvy about RFK Jr. And I think going in, he realizes it's a tremendous battle ahead. But he's going to bring a lot of the ideas to the fore, and let's see what happens. What do you got?
1968 Camaro SS. It might be the best thing for RFK Jr. to be snubbed by the Dems, making him a martyr. And Xavier Figueroa says, DJ, RFK Jr. is only one man. If he wins the presidency, he still has to deal with the deep state. Do you know if he has a short list of appointees that he will install into the cabinet and other judicial posts?
Oh, I'm glad you said that, because one of the things I wanted to say is, like, you know, don't look for RFK Jr., a lifelong Democrat, part of the biggest Democrat family in the world, to have Republican positions. He's not going to. But on the core issues, all that cares about it, the Democrat-Republican part, doesn't actually matter in this phase of time. It really doesn't, because the bigger issues are the actual control and tyrannical consolidation of humanity is what's happening. And people who are against that, for example, Bobby Kennedy's come out with a position against the central bank digital currency, CBDC, which is the absolute death knell for freedom anywhere if they get that installed, because then they control your money and they control what you can do with it. That's the end, basically. So you won't have anything that resembles a democratic republic. He knows that. He's gone on the record with that. I think Trump should go on the record with that, and I can see him opposing it. But see, this is the thing. You're going to need, this isn't going to be a battle over, you know, like abortion or gay marriage or something like that. This is a lot, the level that it operates on is going to be, you're going to look for people who respect the Constitution and allow people, you know, the ability to work things out. This is the whole point behind freedom and leadership and freedom. And Kennedy has an incredible legacy of that. But, you know, you're going to find, you know, he comes out of the Democrat Party. So I understand that the Democrat Party is captured, which is, I think, why they're so opposed to him. By the way, what happened to Senor Bezos and his ex plans? Well, he was passed over on Blue Origins, at least. He's still trying, don't get me wrong. But he was passed over for Elon, who they thought could make the smart cities and the brain chips more fashionable. But it is interesting that Bezos was right in the middle of his own kind of X crusade. And, you know, that involved the consolidation of food, media, and space with Blue Origin, and very weird imagery to boot that he was using for Blue Origin. I had something else for you here. Hang on just a second. Oh, yeah, this is interesting. Just to show you some of that chicanery and the kind of trickster thing with Musk. So here he is tweeting out, and he goes, Tesla Powerwall enables your home to operate normally during a power outage. And then he goes, if you have enough rooftop solar, you can go off-grid for most of the year in high latitudes and whole year in low latitudes. Okay, so with Starlink, right, no one can ever go off-grid ever again because you're surveilling every little bit of their movements on the planet. You're giving the military-industrial complex the ability to do that. So don't come off and say that, you know, you're supporting people going off-grid, because that's the biggest farce I've ever heard in my life. So let's get real about some of this. You know, I think a lot of the moves towards, you know, allowing more freedom of speech and things like that largely was to stop a hemorrhaging economy on the side of those social media companies. And although, you know, I'm glad that he turned things around at Twitter as far as that goes, you know, a lot of the stuff that he puts out there, it's almost like, how stupid do you think I am? I mean, how stupid do you think people are? You know, I mean, anything that's off grid, as it were, you know, this idea that you're going to be off grid and safely away from those government and their trackers is just not plausible. And so, you know, we should call him out on things like that. That's Bezos saluting his ex cover. And this guy, you know, it's kind of incredible, because you would think that these people would have remarkable initiatives for the planet moving forward, for example. And, you know, Musk talks a lot about space, and there's supposed to be idealism mixed with that. But also the way he puts it is like, you know, consciousness must survive. You know, consciousness is doing, will do just fine without going to Mars. Right. And I think, you know, Gigi did a video on Elon Musk, and she made some of the same points on that, Gigi Young. But what's interesting for me is that they kind of have Elon playing all sides of the game in a way. And where I think he's taking the heat is in the public, you know, in the media, they're saying, oh, he allows people to speak freely on Twitter. Get him. And for better or worse, he made the environment better there. But let's not be too hasty in understanding where that's coming from or citing things that aren't there on that. Yes, Miss Livia.
Johann Wolf, But if X incorporates Bitcoin, it can really go around the bankster's fiat grip. Musk speaks out against centralization. I've always thought Musk's assigned role is to slowly release secret tech to appear organic.
Well, it's funny because the technology part brings us into so many areas. If you had sophisticated technology that came into your possession in, say, the 1940s as a country, by now, where would you be with it? So let's suppose, you know, other people had it, but you had the best program for it. So 80 years later, where would you be with it? You'd have a lot of it pretty well worked out. You've had a lot of it redeveloped, and you'd have learned a great deal about it. So by the way, that thing about Bitcoin and all that stuff, you know, it's hard to say with everything that's going on what the correct course should be. But I think there's a lot of downsides to digital currencies. And certainly on the federal level, it's a complete anathema to freedom, right? But on the individual side, you know, assigning value to thing based on a mathematical probability and then creating Bitcoins, you know, it's just one of those things that's out there. I don't think it should be made into a religion or thought of as something that can save the economy, because, you know, a lot of people on the economic side that I've talked to said, well, you know, it is trackable, you know, Bitcoin is trackable as well. So, you know, I like the theme or the idea of producing an independent currency, but I don't think that Bitcoin is it. Yes.
Ryan Ponto. DJ, have you heard the Joe Rogan interview with Eric Weinstein? It's a bit cryptic, but Weinstein seems to be suggesting his own intuitions about and even experience with the X-Protect group.
Yeah. They did. What I see is the Gary Nolan, Elizondo, you know, the whole funny farm circus thing around the UFO file, the CIA circus show. And those are all CIA people. I mean, it's not me saying that. They're CIA people. So all those people are driven to create a feedback loop for the Central Intelligence Agency. CIA wants a certain narrative out there about UFOs because they're cooperating with these aerospace companies to roll this stuff out, and they want it to come out in a certain way where they create defense budgets and all this stuff for it. That's why they have ARRO, which is the UFO Defense Office, or UFO DOE. And what does that tell us, really? That they want something, they attached it to the National Defense Authorization Act, which, if you think about it, is mind-blowing. Because it means because they had high-ranking positions, Gillibrand from New York and Rubio from Florida, because they were in high-ranking positions for the Senate Intelligence Committees that they sit on, they could attach it, which meant if nobody wanted ARRO and didn't want their UFO defense office, then none of that bill could have passed. And that's a $1 trillion bill, close to $1 trillion. So you can imagine those people wanted their money. So they'd be like, okay, yeah, we'll sign on to anything, make them sign it. So ARRO got lobbed in that way. That's how we got this thing. Glad you mentioned it. I'm glad you brought it up, because here in Politico, which is a basically liberal Democrat publication, Alien Motherships, Pentagon official floats a theory for unexplained sightings. And one astronomy professor calls the notions highly questionable and odd. That's a good point. So this thing, this whole, hey, you know, UFOs with AI came here and they're surveying us. Sean Kirkpatrick was the head of the UAP task force, right? UAP is a stupid word that they take to mean UFO, but they're just trying to rebrand the thing for themselves. The official in charge of the secretive Pentagon effort to investigate unexplained aerial incursions has co-authored an academic paper that presents an out-of-this-world theory. Recent objects could actually be alien probes from a mothership sent to study Earth. Now, it's funny because this story just came out, but the actual thing of that guy saying that happened maybe 2 months ago. But the reason it's coming out is because they're going to have all these open hearings about UFOs starting April 19th, which is next Wednesday. Now, interestingly enough,
wait, the same day that Bobby is announcing?
It's the same exact day. That's wow. That's the crisscross there. And they just announced that, like they could have chosen any day. So it is quite interesting when you think about it, just in terms of the coincidence, you know, think about it. No coincidences. So the official in charge, Sean Kirkpatrick, head of the Pentagon's All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office. So that's Arrow, and Kirkpatrick is in charge of it, but he's an unusual figure in the middle of all this because he's working with Avi Loeb over here at Harvard. Loeb has the astrophysics lab where he and Elizondo, we can just picture them carrying it up the stairs, just installed a new telescope on the roof to look for UAPs, okay? So, and he runs the Galileo project. That's where they're throwing the UFO thing, you know, and the Galileo project is all CIA people like Elizondo. So Harvard, CIA, UFOs, that's not a good mix. I don't care. You know, like I would take a cynical scientist over that, you know, like we're going to create a phony narrative. Let's see what we can con people with. So here's a few things from this article. It's unusual for government officials, especially those involved in a nascent effort to collect intelligence on recent sightings, to discuss the possibility of extraterrestrial life, although top agency officials don't rule it out when asked. Avi Loeb teamed up to write that the objects, which appear to defy all physics, could be probes from an extraterrestrial parent craft, right? So isn't that like the mothership from Close Encounters? Parent craft, mothership. After Loeb posted it online, the paper gained notoriety from a post in the Military Times. So it's a huge white paper. I've read this thing, and Kirkpatrick's involvement, this is from the article again, Kirkpatrick's involvement in the academic paper demonstrates that the Pentagon is open to scientific debate on the origins of UFOs. Yeah. All right. They had a hearing in 1950 on UFOs. Okay. So that was what, 75 years ago, 74 years ago. So, you know, think about it. The idea that this is something, oh, they're going to finally have a meeting and talk about this. I mean, they already know. And so the rest of this is theater. But the question is why? Why even have the theater? And guess who's heading up the committee and putting it under all threats domain, which is a piece of that Senate Intelligence Committee?
Is it Little Marco?
No. It's Kirsten Gillibrand. So, you know, we have the same players over and over again. But I do find that interesting. And basically, the upshot is they're mainstreaming this idea of these ships coming in that something like a Oumuamua is a large AI thing that's gathering intelligence. So they're setting up something there. My next thought on that is they're going to fake a signal. Like, oh, we got a signal from these aliens and, you know, we're talking and they want us to clean up the environment or something. And my solution for that is to have companies like Apple and Microsoft and all those companies who destroy the environment, that they can pay for the cleanup. How's that? So I bet we'd stop hearing from the aliens immediately. But this is the interesting thing. So you have a real subject with, you know, intergenerational experiences of people actually interacting with crafts and beings and things like that. You have years and years of people seeing these things, and you're reducing it, all of that and all that knowledge and all the TV shows and movies and everything else, right down to this idea that we can create a narrative that there's an alien threat, a UFO threat. And through that threat, we can, you know, devise this whole kind of idea of consolidating power to fight the threat. So this is what we've been after in looking at this, that it gives them the ability to consolidate, you know, a legal constitutional government into a completely continuity of government martial law situation. That's the thing that they've been after for a long time. And the fact that they're so easy and loose talking about COG now is disturbing also. What I think is interesting about the articles is over and over again, it's Democrat publications who are publishing and promoting, like New York Times and Washington Post. They love the UFO threat thing because the CIA controls the Democrat Party and they control the Democrat media. So, you know, and they have deep fingers on the Republican side as well. Don't get me wrong, but they control that so much that there's something strange about the push coming specifically from the left wing side on the UFO thing. That's the false UFO thing. I never want anyone to question all those experiences and all those witnesses that there is a genuine UFO phenomenon. Make no mistake about it. And we've studied it on this show. We've had the best experts on this show talk about it. And some of those experts have passed on and left us this legacy of their work. But let's not forget, this is a very important issue with the UFO file. And so them bringing, they realize that on their side too, on the deep state side. So they're bringing it, and they're going to bring the disclosure question into 2024, just make no mistake about it. So the question is, are we going to be prepared to ask the right questions this time? I often make the joke about George Knapp when Elizondo came out. And Elizondo came right out of the CIA to do this whole operation. And he was run by Jim Semivan, who was a huge, like major CIA officer, on such a CIA official on a high level over 25 years. And my joke is that Knapp used to ask him the questions, what do you like to be described more, as a hero or as a leader? You know, which one are you more of, a hero or more of a leader? No tough questions. No, where did you get this information? No, hey, if you smuggled this information out of the government, Mr. Elizondo, you know, why aren't you in jail? Things like that. And that's why all those people avoided me like the plague, because when I would put the question out there, any of those people, Elizondo or Nolan or any of those people, if they just got a steady stream of real questions for 2 minutes, the entire op goes away, because they'd have to plead the fifth on everything. Because basically, the work that they're doing, and this is a problem, there's a real knowledge gap. So when someone mentioned before about Weinstein being on Joe Rogan and stuff, talking about UFOs, but he'd be the first one to say that he doesn't know anything about UFOs. So, you know, there's a weird problem in the public around this, which is these shows know that the UFO topic is important, and they know that it's a big subject and it gets a lot of attention, but they don't know anything about it. And so they're like, well, I'll get somebody with a credential, like a CIA officer in here, not realizing that the CIA is running this whole thing. So that's a problem fundamentally. How can you get any kind of genuine investigation if you have a group with a vested interest as your main source of information? So, you know, even guys like Tucker, who do good shows and things, like, they make that same mistake. And I've brought this up, but that's a big one that we have to deal with going forward, which is, either you know about this stuff, or you're taking the time to talk to the people who have gone through those things or have done that research, or else you're just trusting a government official to give you their version of it. You know, so this comes up a lot. I mean, it's funny when you think about somebody like Musk, who is very cagey about the UFO thing, but he must know a great deal about UFOs because of SpaceX. I mean, just the data that you would get from, you know, having that much attention on space, you'd get tons of UFO data. So there's a lot of blind spots in this stuff where we have to play along and pretend that the official reality is reality, but it's not. So let me say that, you know, in terms of things like Musk and SpaceX and stuff, his knowledge of the UFO file must be through the roof. Yes.
On that note, 1968 Camaro SS says the public has to be more vocal, engaged, and get off our asses after the next election. Yes. It's our country to take care of, not the government's. Little by little, we've been giving the state our power, but it's supposed to be of, for, and by the people.
Well, that's really true. You know, when you have someone in Congress, and when you have the president and they take us into a war in Ukraine, for example, now they say that we actually have people shooting at our troops in Ukraine. So the things that they're doing, this is what we learned through the Vietnam experience of our parents and grandparents. They they are doing things in your name because you're an American citizen and you are voting for certain outcome for them to do certain things. So they've gone so far beyond being responsive to our questions that the very name representative is kind of ridiculous. Who are they representing? Well, certainly not us. So we have to remember that there is a personal responsibility to let them know. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And how can you kind of grow as a country, and how can you, you know, attain to any kind of honor as a nation if you just have a small, you know, group that's dedicated to defense contractors and consolidation of the globe? And, you know, this is one thing that Bobby Kennedy is pointing out really well, which is, you know, what's happening is that the neocons' American century that they wanted to have is going up in flames, because every place that they turn to do things like Syria, Iraq, and Ukraine, it becomes just a big boondoggle for the defense contractors, but there's no progress for the people involved. And their own plans seem to be blowing up in their face as well, because part of the thing of those leaked documents was showing just how poorly the Ukraine government was faring in that war. And, you know, the whole war aspect is terrible, but let's face it, you know, it's not, that war is not our war. The point is for us to go in and create some kind of a peace setup circumstance so that both of the parties involved have the ability to save face. Right now, we're amping it up because the defense contractors are getting the money. That can't be the right way for the United States or for people, you know. And even if you're somebody who's lost, you know, any sense of anything because you've watched too much MSNBC and you've gone completely over the liberal track, even there, you'd still have to say, do you really want to fund people getting slaughtered or putting people on the front line in Ukraine instead of funding a peace process? Like, the only people who make money out of that are Boeing and Lockheed Martin. So there has to be some shift in the leadership in this country, and it has to come at the top. Absolutely. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. Fantastic to be here with you tonight for the special report. When they mentioned that Twitter was becoming X, you know, I just thought, this is the real kickoff for the X steganography and the technology that it represents. So I wanted to get this one in. We'll take a couple more questions, then we're going to wrap it up for tonight. Yes, Miss Olivia.
Okay, Simone Nyman. Does DJ think that Nazi International are behind Elon Musk, who was predicted in Von Braun's novel?
Yeah, this is a crucial point. And I have a more focused a report that's just focused on Elon coming up. And it's very odd if you think about it. One, that Wernher von Braun, who, you know, headed up our space program, but came directly out of the Nazi space program, that he writes a book, and it's kind of like a novel, but a technical manuals type novel. And inside, the person who's leading the group in Mars is named Elon. And this Elon wants to go, the real Elon Musk wants to go to Mars. And he has this kind of fascination for it. And, you know, when you think about that, what are the odds of that? We know, again, that von Braun also had this incredible ability to predict things out into the future because his mother was psychic. This is what Russell Targ told me. Because, you know, he hired Targ to make him an ESP machine because he wanted to test the ESP of astronauts. So that's a lot closer to what...
Why did he want to test the ESP of astronauts?
See, this is interesting. It's a really good point.
That is a really interesting question.
Well, why do you think?
I don't know. I'm going to sit with that. I'm going to ask everybody in the ideas room
ideas. Here's where I would go with it. You're getting a lot closer to the real space program when you get the handle on that story. But one of the things that happened with von Braun and Targ told me the story a couple of times. But he had this interesting conversation with him, and he learned that von Braun's mother had been so psychic that she was in demand back there in Germany, that these officials and people wanted to talk to her, and that she was well known for being able to predict all kinds of events. So then you have this very kind of psychically gifted Nazi in the space program, writing this book in the 50s about the Mars Project and having the leader being Elon. It does, like some of the unusual things about Delshow and Trump, it makes you wonder about how much of that timeline is visible for certain types of people when they get to a certain place. I remember the famous Casey quote, which is they're saying, hey, are there predictions in the Great Pyramid? And he said, yeah, oh, absolutely. And they said, well, how accurate are they? Or like, how can you tell what they are? And he said, well, through the geometric shapes and the mathematics that are involved, an initiate could read it, basically, and that they would know that they're embedded in there. And then they said, well, how accurate could they be? And Casey said, in some cases, they would pinpoint the individual, the year they were born, the day they were born, and the street name that they'll grow up on. So that does make you wonder just how much of these things are organized on a deep level, and how could it predict that or know that? How could you see those trends? That's pretty Atlantean technology, if you ask me. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. It's great to be with you here tonight. Just terrific. I want to remind you, especially if you're new here and if you haven't already, to go to the darkjournalist.com website and sign up for our newsletter. That's an important free newsletter for you to keep in touch with us about these incredible interviews that we have coming up for you and some remarkable X-Series episodes we have coming up, big X series episode, I think on April 28th, that's Friday the 28th. I think that's right. And also incredible documentaries, events and everything. Stand up and be counted. Make sure you're in there and added onto the mail order list or the mailing list. And also get behind the program, subscribe and get behind the work that we do here, that we enjoy bringing you these reports so much. Okay, Miss Olivia, last question.
Okay, hold on. I lost it, but I'll find it. Okay, here it is. Nanette Christ, DJ, do you think RFK Jr. will be used to attack Trump over vax deaths to sabotage him?
Well, it's an interesting question. I don't think so. But I understand the concern about that, because in fact, what's interesting here is Trump should hold the same position on it as RFK Jr. does, because we know that that's the correct position. So if anything, if I were to have Trump in front of me, I would say, become someone who is more transparent about this and say, I was misled by such and such and such on the pharmaceutical CDC side, and we made some mistakes, but the second time around, I'm going to go back to my original plan and have Bobby put together a commission to study these things. That's the approach that I would take with it. I wouldn't run away from it, because I don't think it, it was a program that he signed on to, and I think he got the wrong intel on it, mostly. And the other thing is, I think, unusually, Bobby and Trump, their views actually do connect a whole lot in a lot of ways. So, they're both against the neocon building empire, and they're both pro-freedom, and they're both, there's a number of things, I think, that where they would see things eye to eye. Fundamentally, you've got a liberal Democrat and a Republican of sorts in Trump. So, they're not going to agree on the majority of things, but it's interesting how many things they see eye to eye on. Excellent question. What else you got?
I actually wanted to make sure that I ended on this note.
Yes.
Okay. So it's Night's Light 80. My mom just beat brain cancer and she is watching DJ with me for the first time.
Wow.
Thank you so much for the show.
Incredible. Well, prayers for your mom, and it's great to have both of you with us. The thing is that, you know, there's so many incredible stories that we have to share among each other. And that's what we get in the ideas room. I can tell you for sure that the very reason for the type of censorship and crackdown and the things that they were doing with social distancing is all that is to prevent the types of conversations that we have right here. And it makes all the difference. So we thank you very, very much. And do you want to give us the list?
I will. I'm going to thank one more person coming up here.
Very good.
Okay. So Super Chatters, Gil and Joy R, You're With Me Is Fun, a cult fan, Ryan Ponto, Catherine Rorden, Empire of the Light, Sun Hero, Ian Carter, Global Atlantis, WC Ray, Donnie Darko 727, Sarah Jane, Donald Craig Harris, Chet GPT Bot, Verna Rodriguez, Mindy Drake, Jim Sarge 3ID, Dominic, A. Maria, Xavier Figueroa, Erica Swenson Elliott, Brian Fest, Kevin Kelso, BC, Ghost Malone, The Buddhas of Boston Sports, and Jammin' Mammy. Thank you so much for your generous super chats.
Fantastic. Wow. I really appreciate it. And thank you for getting behind the show and all that we do here. We will be back with you next week. And look for a very special interview next week, special announcement, and also look for our the X series to come back with a bang on April 28th as well. And we'll have some interesting surprises for you in the meantime, though, special reports, interviews, and everything else. It's so great to have all of you with us, and we will see you all next week.
Hold on, I got a quote. This is from Alicia Holborn. Quote, no one should be allowed to invent anything unless they can uninvent it. That's from Fish on Barney Miller. And we all agree.
Wow. I think there's a certain amount of truth to that. Well, I guess the Terminator, you know, the Terminator monster, the whole Terminator series gives us some idea of what was going to happen. And it's very interesting that that movie came out in 1984. And I think you'll find a lot of important things circle in around that date, you know, of course, Orwell's book, but there's a number of interesting patterns that take place, including Otrog, you know, in 1984. They're one of these companies that existed that were the precursor to Musk and SpaceX. And so there's a lot of pieces there kind of hanging out. I'm going to say a couple of shout outs to people. Sharon Baxter, I trust dark journalists. Thank you. I trust you too. Najat, it's great to see you. Jennifer Walters, Joe Gallo. Wow. Terrific group out there. Marco Zerpo, that's good. Scarlet Fire, what does that say? Freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed. Absolutely. Boy, is that true. Fantastic quote. I'll be back. It's a stellar rendition. Fantastic. There's Najat. Great to see you. Fantastic. I know Kate's out there. It's great to see you. Debbie McAdoo. Jem Passavant. It's great to see you. Thank you so much to see you out there, Jen. Global Atlantis. What does that say? Incredible deep episode tonight. Thank you. It's great to go deep on these things with you. What's weird is I have a lot of material left over. I guess
always.
It's just it's more special reports on the way. We will see you all next week. And like I said, watch out for some surprises. Very interesting things coming up. And congratulations to Bobby Kennedy announcing his presidency this week on Wednesday. And on Wednesday also, we have the UFO Congress hearings. Well, maybe something will come out of that. Maybe Gillibrand will expose the whole secret, right? Maybe not. We'll see y'all next week. And, you know, it says end broadcast, but...
Never really ends.
Never really ends. Any final words there, Miss Olivia?
Well, we've got the eclipse coming up also.
Oh, when is that?
I believe it's the 20th.
You're kidding.
No, and it's supposed to be intense. So
that's the same day as the UFO hearings and Kennedy's announcement.
Yeah.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. That's right. It's the 20th. Yeah. Okay, well, somehow makes sense, doesn't it? And there's a major eclipse. I've been trying to get more information on it for next year, for May, which is an actual X eclipse across the United States going from one end to the other. And this is a rare kind of planetary alignment. So I want to check this out and learn more about it as we go.
I do want to say the thing with eclipses is that the idea is that you turn down the lights and you turn it back on. It's sort of rebooting, but what it does is it,
interesting,
it
yeah,
illuminates all of the roaches. Right. So we shall see.
We didn't get to all the roaches tonight, but we will try. So we'll see you all next week and have a fantastic weekend, everybody. And remember, once there was, never let it be forgot, once there was a Camelot. Have a great night, everyone.
God bless.
Linda M., thank you.